In normal times, Alaskans tend to bank on seniority when it comes to their congressional delegation, but these may not be normal times. I'm Steve Heimel. In the primary election, our senior senator faced opposition, and the winner of that contest will also be opposed. What do Alaskans have to ask Senator Lisa Murkowski? Our number, statewide and toll-free, is 1-800-478-8255-478-TALK. Email talk at APRN.org. Senator Lisa Murkowski wants to serve another 6 years, and she's our guest on Talk of Alaska, statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. The Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance has a simple request. If you smoke, take it outside. Smoking hurts more than just you. Secondhand smoke increases the risk of coronary heart disease and kills nearly 50,000 non-smoking Americans every year. Smoking around your kids causes chronic and life-threatening diseases and is linked to sudden infant death syndrome. If you choose to smoke, make a choice that protects others who don't. Take it outside. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
Well, here we are again with another election special edition of Talk of Alaska. It's disorienting for me, and it's disorienting for our guests, but we're in a disoriented week and a half that's been going on so far. Senator Lisa Murkowski joins me on the other side of the desk here. Senator, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Great to be back with you, Steve.
Well, thank you. I think we really kind of have to open referring to the events of yesterday. We had the memorial ceremony for Ted Stevens, and it's fresh in all of our minds. I don't know about you, but I'm a little starstruck. it's hard for me to get it in my head that my Ted Stevens is the same Ted Stevens that all these national people, Joe Biden and all that, mm-hmm. revere so much.
Well, Steve, that was who Ted Stevens was. You know, I made the comment, and so many others yesterday made it as well, that Ted was Alaska. But we knew him here. His world in Washington, D.C. was one where those same relationships that he built with people here in this state, where he was walking through the airport or going out fishing with people, he took that same style and just the Ted charisma, and he used that in Washington, D.C.
It was the same thing?
He built real friends. And I think you heard that yesterday. You saw that in so many of his former colleagues who were there to show their respect. It was a reminder to us that in these friendships that clearly go across aisle, which they absolutely should, for the good of the state they should, that those are real. Those are personal relationships, and Ted had the very real ability to build those, and I think to utilize them for Alaska's benefit.
Oh yeah,
we heard that from Danny Inouye real clearly.
Right. you've been there for a while now, more than a term, and you got to watch this. Mm-hmm. You got to work with him.
Mm-hmm.
And your career path has been kind of interesting because you jumped right into the leadership. It really didn't take very long before you were in the leadership. In fact, it's hard to book you for a Tuesday morning at 2:00 p.m. D.C. time because you have to be in front of a national microphone because you're coming out of the Republican caucus.
Well, I mean, it has been quick. It has been quick. And it's not only been within the leadership, but the role that I've assumed on energy. Getting to the ranking seat on energy within 6 years is a pretty unusual situation, but so much of it is about timing. It's about choosing a committee and really kind of putting all your apples in one cart and saying, this is what is important for me and my state, and focusing on that and building that. But, Senator Stevens, when I first got there, he gave me some good advice because I I'd really like to be on Commerce too. He says, Lisa, we got to split up the work here. There's so much for us to do for the state of Alaska. He says, I got Commerce covered. Obviously appropriations covered. And we did. I worked hard to get on the HELP committee, the Health, Education, Labor, Pensions Committee, because Alaska's interests when it comes to health care, when it comes to education, we needed to have a seat on that committee, sitting on the Indian Affairs Committee, important to us as Alaskans. But we really kind of divvied up that work. But my focus was number one, was what we can do from an energy perspective for an energy-producing state like ours.
Well, that's kind of a tough one, isn't it? Where's it going?
Energy?
Yeah, Neil, you have your platform,
yeah.
Senator.
Yeah.
You're campaigning, and you're a Republican, and Congress is extremely unresolved on energy policy, on greenhouse gases, and so forth. And this is your chance to tell us what you want and how you want to get it.
Well, the one committee that I would suggest to you is still working the way most people envision committees within the Congress to work is the Energy Committee. And it comes with leadership. Senator Bingaman and I have a great working relationship where we say, you know what? We're going to try to build something together as a committee. We moved through a bipartisan energy bill last June, passed the committee on a good, strong bipartisan basis. It not only focuses on increased domestic production, which we need for our own energy security, but really looking towards the future, how we build out renewable energy sources, how we put in place those incentives that allow for these to come on in a manner that works. And then the third leg of this energy policy is focusing on what we can do right here today, each and every one of us. And that's conservation and efficiency, not talked about nearly enough. But when we're trying to really assess how we can reduce our emissions, how we can reduce our footprints, how we can be less reliant, the first place to start is don't use so much. But we need to be educated in how we do that. We need to be smart. We need to be responsible. So we move through a bipartisan energy bill. It got caught up in the politics of politics, and that energy bill is still sitting. We had hoped that it was going to be the vehicle that would have advanced this summer, but it got caught up in, Senator Kerry was advancing his cap and trade proposal, even though I think he knew that he did not have the votes sufficient to advance that. The Republicans have been blamed for the demise of that. I will suggest to you that I led that fight. This is not that cap and trade proposal that was advanced by Senator Kerry, Senator Lieberman. It's not one that would work for this country. We saw what the cap and trade proposal out of the House was, the Waxman-Markey bill, would have been disastrous for us had that moved forward. So we have an opportunity coming in. I'm not very optimistic about the prospects for energy legislation that is a broader package in this next few months that we have before the end of the 111th Congress. But I am very optimistic about what we can advance early next year, focusing on just these aspects of an energy policy, how we can reasonably reduce our emissions without kicking the economy in the gut, and working to be more energy independent through using what we have.
All right. Let's say that Republicans gain control of the Senate.
Okay. That would be a good thing.
What do you want?
Well, if the Republicans gain control of the Senate, I would then be chairman of that energy committee in January. For us, again, as an energy-producing state, this is a prime opportunity to set the agenda. The agenda needs to be one, again, where we are working with everything that we have to reduce our reliance on others for our energy needs. When you think about, lots of people talking about debt and spending right now. We spend more for oil from countries that do not like us. When we talk about the debt that we are taking on, so much of it is because of our reliance on foreign sources of energy. So what can we do? Let's look at our transportation fleet. Right now, we run our cars and trucks on gasoline. Is there a better way? Let's look at natural gas for our vehicles. A lot of discussion about battery plug-in vehicles. Well, we've got a little bit of issue with that here in a state like Alaska because there's some real concerns about what happens in the cold. We've got to make sure that as we advance our technologies, they're working for us, not only in the lower 48, but around the country. So bigger picture is how we reduce our reliance on others, how we can be more energy independent. And energy independence comes about through using less energy, from producing more of our own, whether it's onshore, offshore, or whether it's harnessing it from our geothermal potential, our ocean energy, our wind opportunities. We've got the community of Kotzebue, who's utilizing solar panels in some of their public buildings up there to offset their energy costs. When you're a community that's powered off diesel, we need to be more innovative in how we reduce our energy costs and we reduce that energy reliance. So it really comes back to a level of independence when it comes to energy.
Hmm. Senator Lisa Murkowski is our guest, and she's campaigning for re-election. And the primary is less than a week away.
Mm-hmm.
Glad to have you here.
Good to be with you.
And we're open for your questions at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. A local call from Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk@aprn.org. So I'm sure we'll get back to energy, Senator, but let's also let's take up this matter of health care reform.
Okay. Yeah.
Apparently, it's become somewhat of a primary campaign issue, what your position is. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to, you know, I don't know. Are you saying Obamacare, or how are you characterizing the thing that was passed out of Congress, and what do you want to do with it now?
The health care bill, I call it the Democratic health care bill. You know, people call it Obamacare. People call it, I call it bad news. The health care bill that the Democrats passed out and that the president signed is not health care reform. When I've talked with Alaskans, whether it was in the town hall meetings that we had across the state or whether it's back in Washington, whether it's in the grocery store, they're saying, well, reform mean that you're going to lower the costs so that I can have greater access, whether it's access to providers or access to insurance? It so much of it comes down to affordability. What are you doing to decrease the cost to me and my family? So what do we do? The Democratic-led Congress passes legislation that neither decreases costs nor increases access. What we're doing is there's over $500 billion dollars in cuts to Medicare here in Alaska. We know that access to Medicare by our seniors is sorely limited because we simply do not have the providers who will see Medicare eligible individuals. So taking $500 billion out of that system that's already broken without fixing doesn't increase access there. We're paying for this through additional taxation, huge taxation, and most of it is on the backs of our small businesses. If nobody's noticed out there, this country's in a recession right now. And what we're doing is we're leveling the health care bill on the backs of small businesses, and we're telling them, okay, you're going to be the ones that are paying for this. You've got an individual mandate that is included in this, which I happen to believe is constitutional. I'm glad that the state of Alaska has joined the 20 other states in challenging this. The state of Virginia just a couple weeks ago now, Department of Justice had filed a motion to dismiss the state of Virginia's action. And courts came back and said, no, we're not going to dismiss this. We think that there's legitimate claims here by the state of Virginia. I think that's good for us. I think you're going to see this go all the way to the top, and we'll get a determination as to what has to happen with this. What has to happen with the health care bill that was passed by the Democratic Congress and signed by Obama is it needs to be repealed. It needs to be repealed, and what we need to do is we need to figure out how we reform health care by reducing costs and increasing access.
Reduce cost, increase access. The current the thing that was passed doesn't do it.
Look.
So how do you do it?
When you're talking about how we can reduce costs, you talk to just about any provider out there, and you ask them, is this practice of defensive medicine, as we call it, is this something that actually goes on? I mean, do you order more tests than perhaps you might otherwise think would be required because of the concern about malpractice and what your insurance companies require of you? And they say, absolutely. Medical malpractice reform is not something that would be brand new. You've got the state of Texas, you've got the state of California that have had this in play for some years. Alaska has had its own medical malpractice reform. That's been in play for a shorter period of time. But our reality is we can actually see a firm reduction in costs. And what's happening in the state of Texas, for instance, because medical malpractice has been reformed, and they've got different laws in place there. They have more providers coming to Texas to practice than they can almost use. Which for us in Alaska, can you imagine if we were in a situation where we had too many who wanted to come here and serve, whether it's our elderly or any level of our population, serve our veterans. We've got so many shortages when it comes to healthcare, and part of it is because it's extremely expensive to practice up here. And they're looking at what's going on with reimbursement rates. They're saying, I'm not going to take on Medicare eligible individuals. So Medicare liability reform. We can reduce our costs by being a more attractive pool. With 700,000 people in the state of Alaska, we're not a very attractive market to cover for insurance. If we could purchase across state lines, allow for pooling. In terms of how we can reduce costs when it comes to delivery of care, this is something where we here in Anchorage have a pretty good model that's already out there. It's this medical home concept, and it's being utilized over at South Central. They call it the NUCA model, and it is a collaborative, cooperative effort where you have the whole team that works to provide a level of care for the patient. The patient has greater satisfaction. The providers have greater satisfaction in the job that they do, and their costs are reduced. So there are true things that we can do. One thing that we know with this healthcare bill that was passed by the Democrats is we are creating more jobs by allowing for a level of bureaucracy on top of bureaucracy and task force on top of task force. Those are jobs that are going to be created. I can tell you that. People that work in the medical billing departments for providers out there are more than just a little bit anxious about what is coming their way and the level of accountability and reporting that they will be required to engage in above and beyond what is already out there. So, as I say, I don't think that what we have done is anything that will help to increase access and decrease costs.
So might as well repeal it and start over again, and here's some things that we can do.
Yep.
Okay. Well, that was enough to get some callers going.
All right. I figured it would.
Senator Lisa Murkowski is our guest, and she's running for re-election to the United States Senate. And let's go to Dillingham. And Matt, you're on the air with Senator Murkowski. Matt?
Yeah. Hi, Senator.
Morning, Matt.
I just have a quick comment, and I'll take if you have a response offline. I believe our great state deserves great salmon runs, and we shouldn't do anything to jeopardize that. And that's all. Thanks.
Boy, I agree 100%.
Yep. We like salmon here.
We like salmon here.
Well, of course, you know that what that's aimed at.
Well, I would assume that because Matt is calling from Dillingham and he's talking about the strength of the runs, I'm going to make the leap that he's talking about Pebble. Is that where you're coming from?
Okay. I think so.
And you know, Matt is accurate in that what we want to do is ensure that our resources, particularly our sustainable resources, as our fisheries are protected so that we have them well into the future. When it comes to Pebble, people have asked me, Lisa, you know, what's your position on Pebble? And I say, you describe to me the project, then I can give you a better answer in terms of where I'm coming from. At this point in time, what we do know is that there is still a fair amount of assessment that is going on in terms of what it will actually look like, what's the size and scope, and we don't know that yet. So I'm willing to hold back my comments in terms of being too skeptical or too encouraging about a project that I don't know everything that I need to know about. I will tell you, though, and I've stated this multiple times, I am not one who is willing to trade one resource for another. I'm not willing to trade a healthy, strong fisheries for minerals. If we can figure out how we can develop our minerals out there through the Pebble Project and do it in a way that does no harm to our fisheries, then I think that that's something that we should absolutely look at. But again, there cannot be a trade-off.
Okay, let's go to Eric, joins the program from Anchorage. Eric, you're on the air with Lisa Murkowski.
Good morning, Senator. How are you doing?
I'm well. Thank you, Eric.
Hey, I was wondering, how do you feel about the USGS findings on polar bears in Alaska on a decline? It seems as though the state of Alaska has disagreed with those findings. I was wondering what you felt about actual people in the field finding these kind of information.
Well, we've looked at the state's comments, of course, and have weighed in as well. This designation of 200,000 miles of critical habitat for the polar bear up north, on the assumption that we may see a decline in polar bear as a result of thinning sea ice, as a result of the ice being further offshore, I think we look at that and you say this is more than just speculation. When we know and understand the numbers and appreciate that here in Alaska, the strength of our numbers when it comes to the polar bear has been good. It's been solid. It's been sound. In other parts of the Arctic, we have seen a reduction in the numbers of polar bears, but those are not in Alaska. And this designation, it's over 200,000 miles, is again based on speculation that something will happen if we see a continuation of receding ice and ice going further offshore. When we make designations, it is absolutely critical that the science be sound. And the state has questioned the soundness of the numbers. The state has questioned the science. And I would agree with where they are coming from.
Eric?
All right. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Senator Lisa Murkowski is our guest, running for re-election on Talk of Alaska. Telephone number 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, email talk at aprn.org. And I know it's a little flamey coming in here off the email. This one comes from Reese, who says, this business about the malpractice insurance costs are driving up the cost of health care in Alaska is unsupported by the facts. Reforms passed in Alaska have not cut the costs or even reduced the rise in costs.
Well, I would disagree with Reese on that, and I would direct him to the Alaska Medical Association, when this issue came before us in debate on the floor, I don't remember, it must have been sometime prior to December, the statement had been made that we hadn't seen any reductions in costs. We hadn't seen the benefits from the medical malpractice reform that had been instituted by the legislature. And
I forgot you were there.
No, that was actually before me.
Uh-huh.
But neither here nor there, the Alaska Medical Association responded quite quickly and quite clearly with a very well-written letter talking about the benefits that the state of Alaska had seen. Now, they did acknowledge that because it basically takes a little bit of time to get ramped up, but they disagreed, and the Alaska Medical Association is the one that they're polling and they're talking with their providers, their docs, and asking them, has this been good? Has this been helpful? And we can make that letter available to Reese if he would like.
All right. Well, thank you. Tom joins the program from Homer, but before we go to Tom's call, I want to take up this other one that came in over email. Chuck, also out in Bristol Bay, is on a boat, and he's just making really an observation. And mm-hmm. You did speak about your relationship with Senator Bingaman, and this goes along the same lines. A lot of Democrats were present at Ted Stevens' funeral. Lisa seems to be blocked into party lines. Lisa should be more like Ted and be able to cross party lines.
Well, it really is, again, about the relationships that you build. And I don't view that as crossing party lines. When I sit down next to Jeff Bingaman on the Energy Committee and we're working out legislation, I don't view that as crossing party lines. I view that as building policy that works for this country, building policy that works for my state. And that's what the legislative process is all about. We are not just kind of independent executives there. I mean, I represent Alaska. But if you think that you can kind of go into this job and just be isolated because you don't want to be talking or working with somebody on the other side, you're not going to get anything done for your state. And so it's not just Jeff Bingaman that I work very well with. On the Appropriations Committee, I chair I'm the ranking member of the legislative branch there. Senator Ben Nelson from Nebraska is my chairman on that committee. We have together built some pretty good proposals coming out of that committee. Senator Landrieu down in Louisiana. We've got a great deal in common, both of us coming from energy-producing states. It's something where, again, you're not thinking about I'm crossing party lines here. You are building relationships to better advance the interests of your state.
Well, I have to say, there's been very sharp partisan divisions, and you've definitely been on the Republican side on it, like healthcare, stimulus funding, now on energy. I mean, there's pretty much no question about that.
But think about, for instance, healthcare and healthcare particularly, but also financial regulatory reform that we just went through in the early spring. What you saw going on in Congress, and maybe it doesn't get as much play up here, when the minority is shut out of a legislative process, as we were shut out of the process with both reg reform and health care, where basically you are presented with a bill and not given the opportunity to advance amendments either in committee or on the floor, when it is such a clearly partisan product to begin with, it is really difficult. It is really difficult to try to feel good about how we're going to shape this legislation if we can't even be heard on an amendment, and look at the outcome of, for instance, the health care bill. The most liberal of the Republican senators out there, those that you might anticipate, and I'll call out my colleagues from Maine, who have on many occasions supported legislation that was not supported by their party. Yeah, there was a real effort by those two senators to try to figure out if there was a path forward. They were shut down. So not only were the amendments from the Republicans as a whole shut down, but any effort to try to bridge that divide was pushed back and said, you know, we don't need you. We don't need you because we have the numbers. And when an institution gets to that point where they consider the minority irrelevant and they shape legislation that is just based on the ideas from the Democrats, then this is going to be a real problem. And you will see a more sharp sharpness in the dialogue when you've been shut out. And so when I stand there with my other Republican colleagues and say that this legislation that was passed by this Democratic Congress with no input from Republicans, it's tough to feel like, okay, we're going to just get through this process and move quickly to the next one and everything is all well and good.
So interesting, because you would think if it was so close to 50-50 that there would be more incentive for agreement, but it seems to have worked the other way.
but here's where I am hopeful. We've got the elections coming up in November. If the press accounts out there, the pundits are right, there will be some good Republican pickups. I think you will then see. I'm hopeful that we might get so many as to take the majority. I don't know whether that can happen, but I do think that there will be greater equity in the numbers between Republicans and Democrats. And that's when I think you've got an opportunity to really be working together. The Democrats cannot kind of bully their way through legislation just through the numbers. So I'm hopeful that it will be a better outcome for policy.
Lisa Murkowski is our guest on Talk of Alaska. Ready for your calls at 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422 as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. The Alaska Public Radio Network builds bridges of communication between urban and rural Alaska. APRN, covering the stories that impact the lives of all Alaskans.
It is Talk of Alaska, and our guest is Lisa Murkowski. This is a special election edition. You'll notice it's Thursday. It's not Tuesday like we usually do the show on. And boy, I'm telling you, it is like it's a rodeo ride with this weird, bumpy schedule for doing the shows. And it's going to get worse. We're going to try to do one on Monday with Jay Ramirez, who we haven't had on yet. He's running for lieutenant governor, and he's ready to go on Monday morning. So it wasn't just the death of Ted Stevens, but that basically threw everything into turbo. So I promised to go to this call from Tom in Homer. Are you ready, Lisa?
I'm ready for Tom and Homer.
Tom and Homer, you're on Talk of Alaska with Lisa Murkowski.
Yeah, Lisa, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the 60s, I had a motorbike that I could get about 300 miles to the gallon, and it would go about 80 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like our public transportation system is outdated, including our cars. Even the latest cars that are being developed, they're just not efficient, or there's no development and research done on them. And particularly with our transportation system between the big cities. I mean, these airplanes are circling longer than it takes to get there. I just think that we're going backwards. It's like we're in a cave on development. And then another question I got is on this business of wars and military bases. We've got wars going on in hundreds of military bases scattered all over the world, but we got people starving to death around the world. And I think our emphasis is wrong, and I just want to get your position on all these hundreds of military bases and wars that we got going on. And then another point that I had was the health plan. On the 2nd of April, I sent you a revised health plan. I believe the existing plan has about 2,700 pages, and my plan had about a half a page. And I was wondering if you have seen it. It was dated the 2nd of April, an email sent to your office. And I'll take the answers off the air.
All right. Thank you, Tom and Homer.
Appreciate it, Tom. I'm going to respond to the last one first because I will admit to you that with all of the emails, all of the mail that I get, I do not specifically recall your one-page proposal. If we can get your last name later, I'll check and see if I'm sure if you sent it in April that we have it and I can take a look at it. Two points that you raise. I'll speak to the public transportation issue first and what is going on in terms of technologies that will allow us to just do better when it comes to transportation. There is a fair amount of research that is going on, and that is incredibly important. I think as we deal with not only emissions from our vehicles, but as we look to again, reducing our reliance on foreign sources of oil, figuring out how we can power our vehicles in other ways. It is important that the technologies move ahead. We get some pretty interesting hearings on what is going on with the development. In fact, we had the head of ARPA-E, which is the renewable energy. It's like DARPA-E for the military. It's the innovative end for energy. He was out at the China Energy Fair in Fairbanks this past weekend. I had invited him up, and when you sit and you listen to some of the great ideas that are out there, so much of it is how you really commercialize it, and this is where we kind of get stuck in what we call the valley of death. Good ideas that aren't moving out quickly enough. But I think it is incumbent upon us. And one of my hopes in helping to set the energy agenda for our nation is how we can be wiser when it comes to how we move people around, whether it is on the ground on our roads or whether it is up in the air. In terms of the military and the spending and where we are, your observation about military facilities all over the globe and the expense of that, I think that is something that we should be looking at, we should be assessing. I'm on the Military Construction Subcommittee on Appropriations, and I know what we put into our military facilities here in this state and across the country. It is important that we ensure that those who are serving us have the resources that they need, have the facilities that they need in order to carry out the task that we have asked them to do. I will tell you, I question some of the military spending in installations, particularly in places in some of the European countries. You know, it seems like we continue to spend a lot of money over there. And is it just because we always have? I think it's fair to look critically and give a critical assessment as to the funding for some of our overseas operations.
Well, while we're on that, what's your perspective on the defense spending in Alaska? You know, I assume Bigot's has taken the lead on the missile defense. We've seen the consolidation, basically, of Richardson and Elmendorf.
The joint facility.
Do you see an increasing military presence in Alaska? It looks like the big one now, and Bigot's is on this one too, is Coast Guard. You know, with the Arctic sea ice is withdrawing, and we don't have icebreakers. You probably noticed this.
Well, it is an absolute given in this state that the Coast Guard, in terms of their presence and how they are involved in really the everyday lives of Alaskans, we feel their presence here so much as a state and greatly appreciate it. But as you point out, we've got a Coast Guard that's doing a lot, and we've got some real physical limitations. We've got some infrastructure limitations. I was with the Commandant of the Coast Guard and Admiral Colvin just last week. We went up to Barrow. We went to Nome, specifically looking to the issue of we've got more water that is coming coming about because of receding sea ice, because of what we're seeing with changes in climate. And that means that the Coast Guard just has more to do. They've got more jurisdiction, and yet they have less assets. I have made the specific ask in appropriations. We've been working aggressively through the Arctic policy that we worked to implement through the end of the Bush administration that the Obama administration has now picked up. We have been pushing aggressively for two additional icebreakers. Currently, we have no polar class icebreakers that are operational. One is in dry dock, for lack of a better term. The other one is out of commission here until at least the first of the year because they also have operational issues. The only thing that leaves us with is the Healy, which is ice strengthened, but it is not an icebreaker. We are an Arctic nation, and we are so because of Alaska. We need to be assuming that role as an Arctic nation, and this is something that I have really been pushing for the past 7-8 years that I have now been in office, is advancing that Arctic initiative. It's not just the polar icebreakers, though, that the Coast Guard will need. With the cuts in the budget that the Coast Guard is seeing coming up, we're seeing a decommissioning of assets. We're losing the Acushnet down in southeast. We lost a helicopter in Sitka when the crash happened off the coast of Washington. We have asked for a replacement H-60 to cover that. But our reality is the Coast Guard in Alaska is responsible not only for search and rescue, enforcement of our fisheries. They're responsible for so much. They were involved in the rescue operation with the airplane that went down with Senator Stevens. The Coast Guard is involved in so much in our state, and their assets are far too limited. When we talk about what we need here in the state of Alaska, whether it's for our Army or our Air Force, our Coast Guard, we recognize we are in a geographically significant area from so many different positions. We're the eyes and ears of the North. This is not just for Alaska. This is for our nation and our nation's security. So when we're fighting for military construction for our installations here and our Coast Guard here, again, these are not Alaska earmarks. This is for the security of the entire nation.
All right, let's go to John, joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Senator Lisa Murkowski, John.
Hello, morning, Senator.
Morning, John.
Yes, I had an energy question about the gas line in Alaska. Is it true that a federal permit has to be in place before anything happens with a gas line in the state?
Well, there's a couple different, I'll call them phases for lack of better terminology. Back in 2004, I introduced legislation, it was passed, that would allow for facilitation of certain things. You know, we put in a loan guarantee, expedited permitting process, the Federal Pipeline Coordinator's Office. That was put in place, again, back in 2004. Obviously, we know what is happening at the state level with the open season, the AGEA process, the Denali project. But in fact, once the decision is made, there is a great deal of work that remains when it comes to the permitting, working with the FERC. If it is a line that runs through Canada, working through their regulatory and permitting process. So once we get through the open season, does not mean that it is a go, if you will, for the line. We all recognize the importance of getting Alaska's gas to market. And I think Alaskans have been frustrated over the years because of what they see as a very slow process. It is slow. And I don't mean to sound discouraging, but even once we get on the other side of this these open seasons, all is not in the clear.
Okay, and just a follow-up. Currently, does any company out there bidding have a federal permit?
Well, decades ago, the Northwest Pipeline I'm drawing a blank on the full name. There were permits in place. There is some question, and those were permits that would cross through Canada. Those permits do remain in place. I think there is clearly some discussion about whether or not those permits would have to be renewed. But those are the only. It was Yukon Pacific.
Yeah, and also TransCanada did get some congressional authorization years ago, and they're still in the game.
Yeah.
But I think maybe you're referring to the lapsing of some of the permits for the in-state gas line of Yukon Pacific. John, is that what you're talking about?
Oh, yeah, and I just think that if the state does get the ability to go ahead, that the federal government has to give their approval, or there's no... If the permit isn't in place, there's no gas line.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, every indication is that FERC wants this to happen, mm-hmm. and Larry Pursley, our pipeline coordinator, has given no indication that there's much federal resistance. I think we're in extraordinary times, and it's not the same ballpark that we were playing in just a few years ago, economically and energy-wise. The telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK, a local call from Anchorage at 550-8422, email talk@aprn.org. Our guest is Lisa Murkowski, running for re-election as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station.
If you're looking to start or grow your own business, Alaska SourceLink can help. They're a web-based referral center for Alaskans seeking business assistance with more than 100 resource partners across the state. For more information or to access resources online, go to www.aksourcelink.com. Connecting businesses to the help they need when they need it. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development.
Well, in talk radio, sometimes they try and call it the lightning round, where you try to get through as many calls as possible in the last 10 minutes of the show, because that's where we are.
Gosh.
It's been an interesting conversation, Lisa Murkowski, and it's difficult for me because I'm used to talking to you as a senator, and now I'm trying to talk to you as a candidate.
Yeah. I'm still talking to you as Steve, though.
Right? but it's this is deal. Okay, now what are we going to do about this, which is not really appropriate for dealing with a candidate. But let's go to Helen, who joins the program from Bethel. Welcome to Talks of Alaska with Lisa Murkowski. Helen.
Thank you for taking my call, and thank you to the senator for talking to us. I wanted to ask if you could recommend what kind of classes for parents if they wanted to teach their kids about, you know, how to make policies and amendments and, like, teaching them what happens when a policy doesn't become an amendment or when a policy changes. That's all my comment. Thank you.
Well, Helen, I think it's a good question because, you know, I don't think our kids, our young people in the schools are really opened up to what does go on, how laws really are made. And we've got classes in American governments and classes in civics, and theoretically that's supposed to help you with that. But my observation is they really aren't that helpful. I'll tell you what I have done, and I really enjoy it. Through the benefits of our Skype and through video conferencing, I'm able to actually get into the schools. It's one of the things that I really like to do in my capacity as a senator is get out and talk to the young people, encourage their questions, and have them try to understand what it is that we do, try to explain to them. And one of the things that we have done, and I think pretty effectively, is we contact teachers in different school districts, or they weigh in with us, and we get a group of them on a line. I can have five different communities online at the same time. We get questions from the students. I'm able to give them a little bit of an update in terms of what's happening in Washington, D.C., what might be going on the floor, and kind of field those questions. And it's a great opportunity for a little bit of give and take. I think it takes it beyond what you may learn in the textbook that in order to be a senator, you have to be 30 years old. It's more real life, real practical. But I appreciate your interest. And it's not just here in the Senate. It's understanding how policy is made at all levels. There in whether it's your tribal government there in Bethel, whether it's your community, not community councils, but your assemblies. It's getting the young people engaged in that where they learn what the process is all about. And learning that process is absolutely critical.
Yeah, there's really no substitute, I don't think, for hands-on. When a person actually grasps, engages with real civics, then the problems that you deal with are you know, enormous. But, local problems often is quite rewarding to...
Yeah.
Just get yourself organized and make a difference.
I was involved with the PTA,
yeah.
And talk about paving the way for difficult issues. I want to also add, though, we also provide for an opportunity for young people who have just graduated from high school to come back and be an intern in my office. And it's a month-long program. We've actually had some great young kids from Bethel. We had Kelsey Wallace. We had she was just here this past year. I mean, it's a great opportunity for hands-on experience for young people to figure out what's going on.
So what's the process for that?
In late January, early February, you go to my website and you just click on a summer intern.
So parents can do that?
Absolutely. The student has to make the application.
Mm-hmm.
They write an essay. I read every single essay from every kid. And I have to tell you, we get some of the, and it's not driven by your grade point. It's driven by your desire to experience something new, to be part of a process, and it is a remarkable program. I was actually an intern for Ted Stevens back a few years ago, 1975.
Okay, let's go to Elston. Joins the program from Anchorage. You're on the air with Senator Lisa Murkowski, Elston.
Thank you very much. Senator, I'm one of the 120,000 Alaskans who voted for President Obama. And I've got to tell you, I have been very disheartened to see you basically pursuing an agenda that is clearly partisan. And I know you have ways of characterizing what you're doing in Congress, but it's obvious to me that you're part of Mitch McConnell's agenda to just say no. And here you're sitting on the public airwaves here in Alaska, and you're telling us that the Republicans had no input on any of this legislation, yet there were 160 Republican amendments to the health care legislation. And it's just, and what's really sad for me, Senator, is that I remember you before. I remember when you were a moderate member of the state legislature and part of the fiscal caucus. And to see the way that you have become such a partisan functionary in the Senate is just sad. And that's my comment.
If I can respond to Elston here. First of all, on one point about the number of Republican amendments that were accepted within the health care bill, I will tell you, I had 19 of my amendments accepted. Well, you say, well, Lisa, you should have had input. What each and every one of those amendments were technical amendments where it changed the language to include Alaska Natives in a definitional section. So in terms of any kind of an initiative, any opportunity to allow for participation in that amendment process, from my perspective, with the amendments, again, that were accepted, so it's actually counted on the ledger, okay, Murkowski got X number of amendments, in terms of anything of substance, it was not there. Now, Elston has suggested that, I am kind of parroting this party of no commentary.
You got 1 minute.
I got 1 minute. We are dealing with an administration that is not supportive of an energy production state like Alaska. Whether it comes to how we develop ANWR or NPRA or Chukchi or Beaufort or Red Dog or Kensington or the Tongass, we have been hemmed in. So I will continue to stand up and fight back against an administration that is not helping my state.
Wow. You actually had another 15 seconds.
Well, I'll use my 15 seconds to say thank you. I appreciate what you provide on Talk of Alaska, but also what you do for candidates to give them a voice and an opportunity. It's great.
All right. Thank you, Senator Lisa Murkowski. Thanks for your role in the ceremony yesterday as well.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying that.
Yeah. I know you had to play a host, and I'm sure it was not easy.
It wasn't easy.
I'm glad you were able to get in here today.
Thank you.
Thank
thanks
you
for
very much.
Making it happen.
Thanks to your staff.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Next Talk of Alaska is going to be on Monday, and it's going to be with Jay Ramis running for lieutenant governor. Dave Waldron at the controls, Josh Edge on the phones, and I'm Steve Heimel. Thank you for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. What would you do with an extra $56 a week? Well, that's how much you're spending if you smoke one pack of cigarettes a day. At $8 a pack, that's $240 a month, $3,000 a year. Think about it, and think about quitting. The Alaska Tobacco Quit Line can help. A trained quit coach is waiting for your call. The Alaska Tobacco Quit Line, 1-888-842-7848. It's free, and it works. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.